Dear Taylor Swift, my name is Dan Latner, and I found myself in a really bizarre situation, and I'm not quite sure what to do about it, so I'm writing to ask for your advice, because you seem like a person who knows how to get things done. Here's basically what happened. In June 2020, I read a book about ADD called Scattered Minds by Dr. Gabor Mate and had a bunch of psychological breakthroughs. A few weeks later, I was hanging out with a friend, and I started having a very interesting and enjoyable subjective experience. I knew about the possibility of these sorts of experiences because I'd done a few meditation retreats, and also read books like Altered Traits by Daniel Goleman and Richie Davidson, and How to Change Your Mind by Michael Pollan. I'm kind of a neuroscience nerd, so I thought the best thing to do would be to report it to a neuroscientist to see if they wanted to do a brain scan. I grabbed some books to back me up and prove I was approaching this whole thing scientifically, and the books I got were Waking Up, A Guide to Spirituality Without Religion by the atheist neuroscientist Sam Harris, and My Stroke of Insight by the neuroanatomist Jill Bolt Taylor, and then I started making some phone calls. A few people I talked to said they couldn't help me, and my brother said he could help me, but actually he filled out a form to have me brought in for an involuntary psychiatric checkup. Now the interesting thing about this is that my brother, despite his good intentions, has a long history of psychological issues, and he wrote some things on the form that flat out were not true, like that I'd previously admitted myself to a mental hospital for depression. So I ended up in the psych ward feeling totally fine, and then I got psychologically tortured and systemically gaslighted. It was not a good scene in there, Tay-Tay. I kept saying, it's subjective, I brought in books about it, and they kept ignoring me or saying things like, we don't go by that, we don't go by that. But after a day, I threatened to sue them for violating my religious rights, and they let me go immediately. I tried to follow up with the hospital to point out their error, and despite all the evidence I showed them of these states being studied at Ivy League universities, the hospital, which is called Homewood Health Center, kept telling me, basically, we don't go by that. So they basically said I had a manic episode, and now I have bipolar. But the thing is, I feel so much better than before. I function better, I enjoy life more, my body feels better, I sleep better, and feels to me like my mind works better. I'm pretty sure they're pathologizing joy and healing. Whatever happened feels like an upgrade, and corresponds, to my great surprise, with descriptions of the early stages of awakening or the spiritual path. So Miss Swift, what do I do with this story? How common is this? Was my experience anomalous or representative of Western psychiatry? Does mainstream psychiatry not acknowledge that there are desirable, enjoyable, psychologically beneficial deviations from baseline consciousness? Because I can assure you from personal experience that there definitely are. You know, I'm usually not the type of guy to go around protesting medical institutions and whatnot. Before I read Scattered Minds, I barely even realized that I have psychology. I don't want to fight. I don't want to broadcast my brother's psychological issues. I don't want to tell everyone that right after I got out of the hospital, two ADD specialists heard me talk about my nervous system and psychology and said I might be a genius. That's so awkward. And I don't really want to be one of those dudes who publicly talks about spirituality and awakening, though I'm kind of settling into it and think it's important to just normalize these aspects of the mind. I'm finding it really challenging to find the right tone and persona to approach this whole thing with, especially the human rights abuse part. What I saw in there was a systemically approved human rights violation, like slavery, residential schools for indigenous kids, and pathologizing homosexuality, and I don't really know how to talk about that because historically speaking, I'm kind of a goofball and it sounds weird coming out my mouth. Can I play you a song that I think sums me up, or at least the old me, or at least a version of me? This one is called Squishy Miss. Morning rays are dragging me into the day. Convey that I have self-betrayed, I have self-betrayed. I've undervalued shade. Pray to decay back into sleep, but there's no way. Smells like somebody microwaved old mayonnaise. Oy vey, I'm gonna pay in this sweaty tent. My dehydrated head cement. I'm punished for how hard I went, how hard I went. My body's overspent and my brain's all bent. Attempts to make my joy augment have got me back on this descent. This descent, I wish this tent had vents. Festival, it's the place that I like best of all. I party with the rest of all, the rest of all. The hippies and their toys and chemicals, cause consciousness is flexible. I wallow in the decibels, I revel in the noise. But let's address the aftermath, depressive mess, the loneliness, the emptiness, distress compressed, and feeling I've regressed to less than best. My father would be unimpressed by all the things that I ingest, and I bet you guessed there's something to confess. I'm short on serotonin, depleted, alone, and just thinking about phoning you. I hear a groan, I forgot that I was not alone. Some pixie clone, her name unknown, a name unknown is dozing in my zone. My tone is thrown, my stomach stone, I've not outgrown my hormones, I'm a horny drone with saucer eyes that roam. She sparkled sweet at the late night with her fancy feet. I knew this sweaty dancing freak, this dancing freak, would end up in my sheets. My favorite treat, skin contact and a techno beat. Make out like human bags of meat with chewed out cheeks, completely indiscreet. She sits and yawns, her beauty stolen by the dawn. I notice that there's glitter on, fuck glitter on. My things in need, her gone, and I know I'm no Don Juan. But it's like she's seen a leprechaun, looks at me like a gnome upon her trailer's lawn. Two ugly duck black swans. I'm mischievous, I'm a self-imprisoned Sisyphus. I keep pushing for a Mr. Squish, a Mr. Squish. I miss my squishy miss. Ridiculous, tormented all the way to bliss. I'm praying for deliverance, deliverance. I'm short on serotonin, depleted, alone, and just thinking about phoning you. I'm short on serotonin, depleted, alone, and just thinking about phoning you. See what I mean, Tay-Tay? Do you see my problem? I used to just run around festivals looking for a pretty little miss to squish, and now I'm like a human rights advocate or something. You want to hear a story about this thing that happened to me a few months after I wrote the Squishy Miss song and just under a year before I ended up in Homewood? Okay, so it's Saturday, July 27th, 2019, and I'm at the Peach Music Festival near Scranton, Pennsylvania. The Trey Anastasio Band just reminded everybody who's in charge, and me and my friends were walking back to our campsite to kick back after a long day of festivating. The campsite at this festival is on a ski hill, which is ridiculous if you think about it, but they also had a water park, so it kind of balances out. But yeah, we're basically trudging up a mountain, planning to have some nightcaps and go to bed, and then I start to hear something. I don't know what it is, but I look down the hill and see a crowd, and clearly something is happening. I tell my friends, hey, something's happening, let's go check it out. Maybe it's something good, do you want to go? Do you want to go see the something? Come on, let's go. They were all like, Dan, let's just go back to the campsite. We've been dancing for hours. Come on, let's go hang out. And I was like, nah, you guys have fun. I'll meet you later. Then I ran off down the hill to see what was up. And I'm so glad I went because it turned out that the something was wagon races. I told you it was on a ski hill, right? So people who come every year know to bring wagons to haul their stuff up from their cars. And at night, they rip down the hill like Calvin and Hobbes. It was amazing. It was the straight-up hippie Olympics. Good times all around. At the top of the races, some people were jamming. So I watch a few wagon runs, and then I sprint to grab my friend's fiddle. I get back to the jam, bust out the fiddle, and the hippies go wild. The races kind of taper off, and the focus switches to our band. All of a sudden, we're surrounded by maybe 150, 200 hippies, and it's a full-on dance party. This continues for a while. Then some cops show up and tell us we have to disperse because we're too funky or blocking an emergency exit or something like that. Everyone goes, aww. And then someone shouts, let's go to the Thunderdome! And starts heading down the hill in the opposite direction of my campsite. Now it's late, and the angel on my shoulder, says that maybe I should go back and try to sleep. But you know what, Tay-Tay? It's like that song of yours. I stay out too late. My brain does not work good. Everybody says, mm-mm. Everybody says, mm-mm. So I yell, Thunderdome! And raise my bow in the air so people can follow me following the dude with the Thunderdome. The Thunderdome, it turns out, was this big igloo-shaped tent structure. I've never seen anything like it at a festival or anywhere else, really. There was a tunnel that you walk through to get into the main space, which was a big sphere, maybe 20 feet high, and inside there was a full PA and a bunch of mics, just waiting for a late-night throwdown. So the band sets up. It was me on the fiddle, two guitars, a drummer, a bass, a rapper, I think, and a singer, and we start jamming. The place is as packed as it could be, with maybe 40 to 60 people, and everybody's getting down. I think I took mushrooms before Trey Band, but I was relatively stable when we started playing in the Thunderdome. But then some people started passing around joints, and this squishy miss up front kept handing me her 40 of vodka between songs, and I think maybe there was something extra in it, and pretty soon I was a lot less sober than I had been. But set and setting, you know? It was Saturday night in the Thunderdome, for gosh sakes. If you can't get loose on Saturday night in the Thunderdome, when can you get loose? Anyway, the party is raging. Me and the band are keeping the jams alive. Everybody's grooving. And then some festival security guards walk in and tell us we have to simmer down. These aren't cops. These are just some dudes who are probably in their mid-20s, whose job it was to keep things chill and safe in the campsite. They tell us we can keep hanging out, but we have to turn the PA way down, or maybe off, and all the hippies are disappointed, but it's pretty late, and the mayor of the Thunderdome tells them, okay, okay, and turns the PA way down or off. So we quiet down, but then everyone gets excited, and the jams heat up again, as they do. The PA comes back on, the Thunderdome goes back into full party mode, and we play like this for maybe another half hour, and then the security guards show up again. I think there were three of them. This time they're visibly peeved. The head security guard says something like, "Hey, I told you to keep it down. You can't be blasting a full sound system right now. What's wrong with you? I guess y'all can't follow instructions, so that's it. Party's over. Shut it down, folks. Turn off the PA. Everybody go home." The Thunderdomers start booing, but the guard holds his ground. Then the mayor of the Thunderdome gets up in the security guard's face and says something like, "Shut up, nerd. This is Peach Fest. We came to party. Nobody cares about your rules, bro. Get out of my Thunderdome." Then the security guard says something like, "Respect my authority, hippie. Shut this down right now or I'll kick you out of the festival." Then the mayor of the Thunderdome comes back with something like, "Yeah, right. You're not even a real cop. You're just some dork with a walkie-talkie." Well, the vibe is changing fast, Tay-Tay. And now the mayor and the security guard are chest-to-chest, pointing at each other's faces, and it's looking like somebody might swing a punch. The head security guard is all caught up in the action and oblivious to his surroundings, but I notice the other two security guards noticing that they're outnumbered by hippies by at least 10 to 1, at least, and realizing that if people start fighting, they're in trouble, even if they have walkie-talkies. Now I'm wobbly at this point. I was loose when I got to the Thunderdome, but I've been puffing down on random doobies and suckling on squishy Mrs. Spiked vodka, and I'm wobbly. But I'm not so wobbly that I can't tell right from wrong or act like a decent person. So I give my head a shake, grab the microphone, and say, "Good people of the Thunderdome, can I have your attention? Eyes over here, please." Everybody looks at me, and I continue. "Listen up, y'all. This has been a fantastic night. Everybody's had an awesome time. But it's 5 in the morning, and these fellas kind of have a point that it's too late to be raging this hard in a campsite where people are trying to sleep, especially when all the musicians are totally wasted and none of us are playing in time or in tune. This is a hippie festival, yeah? So where's the love and light? Let's cool it on the aggression, chompers. Everybody just take a breath and remember that we're all here for a good time. These dudes aren't cops, they're just some local security guards trying to do their jobs, and they're being fairly chill. So let's be chill back, shut it down, get some sleep, or go hang out at our campsites, then we can all enjoy the last day of Peach Fest 2019 tomorrow. Cool?" As soon as I finish talking, all the aggro energy dissipates. The mayor of the Thunderdome and the head of security hug it out. Other hippies hug the other security guards and thank them for their hard work. The security guards shake my hand and thank me for taking care of business. And everybody says goodnight and goes back to their tents. Except I don't make it back to my tent. I walk a little bit up the hill and fall asleep on the path, spooning my buddy's fiddle case. I wake up confused, as you might imagine. Getting wobbly and fiddling till 5 in the morning is something I've been known to do, but that was my first time passing out on the grass spooning a fiddle. That was some wook shit, Tay-Tay. Some straight-up wook shit. The first thing I do when I wake up is check the fiddle case to make sure everything's okay, and it's mostly okay. The fiddle's there, the bow's there, but the shoulder rest is missing, so I go back to the Thunderdome to try and find it. While I'm looking around the Thunderdome, one of the guys associated with the Thunderdome, not the mayor, but maybe his second-in-command, comes up to me and says, "Hey, you're that guy who stopped the brawl last night, aren't you? That was dope. I thought there was going to be a riot, but you got on that mic and sorted everybody out. You were so in command of that situation. That was awesome. Thank you for doing that." I said, "Oh, thanks, man. Glad I could help. I used to be a tour guide, and my entire job was vibe control and communication with big groups in weird situations. So I guess tour guide Dan showed up. Fun is fun, but you gotta play safe, you know? It's no fun if people get hurt." So that's my Peach Fest story, Tay-Tay, and there are three reasons I told it to you. The first is to show you that, like I said, I'm not necessarily the ideal mouthpiece to talk about this very serious human rights issue. I'm not Nelson Mandela or Rosa Parks. I'm not lock 'em up crazy, that's the whole point. But I am a freak on the weekends, and that makes it challenging to show up in a way that respects the severity of the situation as well as my authentic expression. If I don't take it seriously, nobody will take me seriously, but if I don't tell it in my own way, it won't be fun for me or for listeners. When I was a tour guide, I got in the habit of wearing a button-up shirt to the airport, because things just go better that way. If this story ends up in court, and I kind of hope that it does, I could show up real professional and talk all kinds of science and medical ethics, bring witnesses to say that I was fine, show evidence about my brother's psychological issues, and show everybody a whole bunch of emails from Homewood that make it crystal clear that they did not have my best interests in mind. But that doesn't really seem appropriate for a podcast, you know? I'm not a lawyer, scientist, or psychologist, and if I try to sound too profesh on here, I might sound like I'm playing dress-up. Plus, who's going to listen to this if I don't make it fun? Medical professionals who profit off the current system aren't going to listen to me, and people who have been abused and traumatized in so-called mental health care institutions already know what's up. I need to reach the masses, Tay-Tay. So, I wanted to tell you that story to explain why I'm making the Dang Lantern podcast and not the Let's Talk About Iatrogenic Trauma and Investigate Whether Psychiatry is Actually Science podcast. It's very strategic. If my tone doesn't work for you, I recommend checking out people like David Lukoff or Willoughby Britton, or maybe the Emergent Phenomenology Research Consortium, which is my favorite organization working on this issue. The second reason I told you this story is to demonstrate how I can maintain equanimity while in peculiar states of consciousness, aka keep my shit together when I'm high. I got into this mess because I tried to report an altered state. That's what so-called spiritual and mystical experiences are. Altered states. And that's what I'm looking for when I go to ayahuasca ceremonies or on meditation retreats. I like hallucinating and experiencing the full range of consciousness. It's fun and it's healing. As far as I can tell, my brother, the folks at Homewood, and mainstream psychiatric sympathizers hold the opinion that all deviations from baseline consciousness equal insanity, equal justifiable to involuntarily commit, and that is just plain incorrect. What about orgasms? What about the fact that psychedelic therapy is practically mainstream? The only reason to involuntarily commit people are when they pose a threat to themselves or others, not if they feel a bit weird. At the peak, this subjective experience was as strong as maybe 3 hits of good acid. It didn't feel like acid exactly, it was its own thing, I'm just talking about the strength. Over the next week, I read a whole book called No Self, No Problem, How Neuropsychology is Catching Up with Buddhism, and dozens of articles about scientists studying these sort of non-dual states. doesn't all that reading suggest that I was stable? By the time I got to the hospital, I was down to the strength of maybe one hit of acid, and I am extremely comfortable and functional on one hit of acid. I was significantly more altered in the Thunderdome than I was in the hospital, and I was able to pull myself together there and de-escalate a potential riot. So this is relevant because one of the main reasons that mental health institutions are so hard to criticize is that the people with lived experience of how bad it is in there get painted as untrustworthy and crazy. It's a catch-22 that goes something like this. I say, I got straight up abused in a mental hospital. And some listeners say, well, you admit you were altered, so how can I trust your opinion? How do you know it was straight up abuse? And I'm like, what are you talking about? You think I can't tell you the plot of a movie if I watched it after smoking a joint? You think I can't recall a conversation after a couple of drinks? I was a bit altered. I wasn't comatose or cuckoo bananas. If I was so confused, how come 2 days later that therapist said I was so bright and self-aware that she thought I might be a genius? I had the highest marks in my high school class, and I tell you what, Tay-Tay, I put the high in high school, if you know what I mean. If I can ace high school while stoned out of my gourd, I promise you that I was not too altered in Homewood to understand that what was happening in there was not scientific and not mental health care. Like I said, that was psychological torture and systemic gaslighting. The third reason I told you the Peach Fest story is to illustrate that I have a basic sense of morality, ethics, and right and wrong. You think I didn't want to keep partying in the Thunderdome? Of course I did. But in that situation, the authority figures were correct, so I sided with them. In this Homewood situation, the authority figures are wrong, so I'm calling them out. These folks are suffering from We're the Good Guys syndrome, which has been known to affect mental health care professionals all the way back to the days of homosexuality as a mental illness, and before that, to the days of runaway slaves have a mental illness called gepetomania that causes them not to know their place in society. One of the funniest or saddest things about this is that as soon as I started telling this story, people started calling me an anti-psychiatrist, as if I'm some sort of terrorist trying to destabilize society. And I'm like, hang on now, are you saying I'm crazy and dangerous because I'm not respecting the order of society and don't understand that I deserve to be locked up? Gee, what does that remind me of? I didn't even know that that was called psychiatry when I was in there. I just knew, as a smart dude and a well-traveled human, that that was straight-up abuse and not medicine. I'm not an anti-psychiatrist. I'm pro-science, pro-common sense, and pro-people leaving the hospital feeling better than when they came in. No matter how clearly I try to explain that, some of my critics are like, psychiatry is science. Everybody says, mm-mm. And I'm like, actually, no, everybody doesn't says, mm-mm. Actually, some psychiatrists, like Stan Grof, have been telling us that there are problems, major problems, with mainstream psychiatry for quite a long time, mm-mm. Here's a quote from The Stormy Search for the Self, which was published in 1990. Many states that mainstream psychiatry considers bizarre and incomprehensible are natural manifestations of the deep dynamics of the human psyche. And their emergence into consciousness, traditionally seen as a sign of mental illness, may actually be the organism's radical effort to free itself from the effects of various traumas, simplify its functioning, and heal itself. End quote. And nowadays, some of the world's leading experts on trauma say that there are still serious issues with modern psychiatry. Mm-mm. Here's a quote from The Body Keeps the Score by Bessel van der Kolk. Mm-mm. My own profession often compounds rather than alleviates the problem. Many psychiatrists today work in assembly line offices where they see patients they hardly know for 15 minutes and then dole out pills to relieve pain, anxiety, or depression. Their message seems to be, leave it to us to fix you. Just be compliant and take these drugs and come back in 3 months, but be sure not to use alcohol or illegal drugs to relieve your problems. Such shortcuts in treatment make it impossible to develop self-care and self-leadership. End quote. And here's one from Scattered Minds by Gabor Mate. Mm-mm. Except when dealing with severe depressions needing hospitalization or other complex mental disorders, I'm reluctant to refer my patients to psychiatrists. It is not the abilities or intentions of individual psychiatrists that are in question, but the very nature of what psychiatry has become, and the type of training psychiatric residency provides to future practitioners. End quote. And on May 1st, 2023, the day I wrote you this letter, Dr. Daniel Amen, who I'm pretty sure is Miley Cyrus's psychiatrist, posted something on Instagram about the overprescription of benzodiazepines for anxiety, and he said, "What's happening in our country is a shit show. Mm-mm." So what do you think about that, Tay-Tay? Maybe I'm not just some angry, deluded mental patient who doesn't appreciate that everyone was looking out for my best interests. Maybe a lot of experts agree with my assessment of the situation. Mm-mm. Maybe it's time for a major overhaul of the legally enforceable paradigm of consciousness and behavior. Mm-mm. Miss Swift, I feel really upset by what I saw in Homewood, and I want to help out people who might be stuck in similar situations. I'm just some hippie fiddler who's in over his head, and I could really use some advice. So if you have any thoughts about this, I'd love to chat. Mm-mm. Einstein said, "Imagination is everything. It is the preview of life's coming attractions." I think Einstein was pretty smart, so I'm going to try to use my imagination to dream myself into thoughtful conversations with mainstream mental health care professionals, and also to bring about a medical system with a more nuanced understanding of these sorts of subjective experiences. Mm-mm. To strengthen my imagination, I'm starting with smaller, more attainable goals, so I sincerely imagine that you, Taylor Swift, will invite me to play a song with you at one of your concerts. Mm-mm. My email is danglantern@gmail.com. Thank you so much for listening. I look forward to meeting you. Mm-mm. Love, Dan. Mm-mm.